All right, we'll call the meeting of Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order. Representative Magnus moves the minutes of February 24th in your packets. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Members in audience, welcome. We have a full house for a couple good reasons, and frankly, I kind of do this on purpose for the veterans folks that are in. I think it's good that we all sit down together as veterans and as ag folks, and sometimes a veteran is an ag person. What do you know about that? And vice versa. But we have Dairy Day on the Hill every year. For those that are not familiar, our dairy folks come in, and they're going to take whatever time they need here to update us on the status of a dairy in Minnesota, very important industry, as you'll find out as we go. And of course, this is the Ag Committee, so even the veterans here need to understand, treats are always welcome when you're testifying or doing anything. We are the Ag Committee, and that's okay, and they'll tell you about some of the foods I'm sure that they brought as they come up here. After that, we're also going to then get a review of our CORE program, which for you ag people are wondering, that's a program that county by county we're starting to offer services to veterans out there, partnering with Lutheran Social Services at this point in time. Great program. We're going to hear an update on that and how their funding's going. And if we have time at the end, we're going to go back to agriculture and take a look at next generation energy grants and where that money went or is going, and how that's doing. So we have a full agenda today. Reminder to me too, shut off your cell phones. If you haven't done that, we do have a rule for the new people here. I'll remind you that if your phone rings, it's $1 to the coffee can there on the cart. And if you answer it, it's $5, all right? That's the only rules we have. And there is a coffee pot there that's for anyone in the room. So if you got up late and haven't had your jolt of caffeine yet, that's there for anyone that needs it. All right, first up, Pat and Greg. Pat Luneman, Minnesota Milk Producers Association, and Greg Jans. Welcome to the committee. As you come up, introduce yourselves to us and the audience, and proceed any way you see fit.
Mr. Chairman, Pat Luneman, President of Minnesota Milk Producers, and a dairy farmer from Todd County, Mary Ellen's back home turf. Well, thank you, Chairman Junkie and committee. It's a pleasure to be here today, bringing Dairy Day at the Capitol to you. We do have a cooler of milk and of cheese here for you. And I want to remind you that this is part of the three-a-day dairy program that you need to keep your bones healthy and to keep up the stamina that you'll need to make it through this legislative session. So have your dairy every day. The current dairy situation in Minnesota and across the United States, it's been really tough. In 2009, I've read that 98% of dairy producers across the United States lost equity in their operations. And basically, that was due to poor prices. So my hint to you legislators today is, if you need to try to figure out how to deal with shortfalls of revenue, ask a dairy farmer, because we're getting to be experts at it. We thought we were in an upturn here at the end of 2009. The markets were rising. In December looked good, January was good, but now we're back headed down into the basement again. Seems to be the milk supplies are plentiful, and the price, it was up in the $15 range, and now we're looking at $13 for March, which is below break even for most dairy producers out there.
What do you consider to be break even?
Right now, that's about $16, give or take, across the upper Midwest. So we're seeing dairy producers out there that have fully used up their line of credit that they had last year. They're looking at, you know, putting crops in this year and having still losing money. It's going to be a difficult situation coming into the spring as to what they're going to do. I don't know that we're asking for help. We just want you to understand what's going on out there in the country today. But we are hanging on. In the upper Midwest last year, both Minnesota and Wisconsin were up in milk production. It seems like our competitive advantages of having forages water, plenty of great land to farm on, a good environment. Our advantages are helping us out. And as we look to the West Coast, their production is declining because of the other issues that they have, because they don't have the natural advantages that we have here in the upper Midwest. So we do have the competitive advantage. There's two programs that I want to talk to you about today, which we need to discuss. The Dairy Profitability and Enhancement Program is something that's been very helpful to our industry. And we believe that the dairy profit teams and the coordinators that we have in place out there have been very helpful to farmers, and that they're needed to help get us through this tough stretch. Last year, this program had a 25% cut here at the legislature. The governor had a 6% unallotment, and it's slated for another 6% cut this year. We're asking you to hold the ground on that. We feel that we took plenty of cuts last year and did more than our share, so hold steady on that one. The Livestock Investment Grant Program has been a tremendous success. And I want to thank you, Chairman Junkie, and members of this committee for establishing the program and funding it with $1 million each of the last 2 years. The demand is obvious. In the last 2 years, over 800 livestock producers have applied for the funds, and total investments in our industry equated to $189 million. And if you put that in terms of how the grant is formed, nearly $20 million in grant dollars are needed. And as I looked at the grants that were awarded, I would say that the projects that they funded are for helping us in our long-term sustainability in our industry. This year alone, 50 farmers received livestock investment grants helping to offset costs associated with their farm investment. We used an opportunity in talking with producers that received a grant to ask how the process went. And we want to give kudos to the Department of Ag. They did a very fine job of doing that. We want to thank you, Chairman, and other authors of House File 2678, which would also provide $15 million in funding this year for the Livestock Investment Grant. And we understand the challenges that you're facing in budgets, but also know that dairy reinvestment creates jobs. And we appreciate anything you can do for funding this year. Equally important is what you did last year, establishing the Agriculture Growth, Research, and Innovation Program, which would provide long-term funding for the Livestock Investment Grant Program and other ag programs. We believe this is the future for state-supported ag advancement efforts, and according to a recent Minnesota Department of Ag fact sheets titled Ethanol Producer Payment Program, AGRI funding would begin in fiscal year 2013. We are interested in working with this committee to remove the June 2013 sunset date of the AGRI program either this session or next session to help ensure AGRI funding for ag innovation in 2013 and beyond.
I'll just point out, I'm not having a hearing on this today, members, but if ever the Racino bill becomes law, in that bill is a pot of money that I have set aside for things like livestock investment grants. There's an agriculture development fund in there that can be used for livestock investment grants, next gen energy grants, and other enhancements to rural Minnesota agriculture. And so I'm not advocating one way or another for my bill here, but that is a pot of money that I think is important as we dig in the couch cushions. I'm looking for everything that might come through this place and trying to put a marker on it for agriculture. So I just want to throw that out there, too, so folks can keep an eye on that. And if that progresses, we're going to try and maintain that pot of money.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to put a plug in for another organization, that AURI. We're talking about acronyms here. But them having a 50% cut is just incredulous. What they do for this state as far as added value in agriculture, we can't allow things like that to happen. So we need to protect AURI if at all possible. We want to talk about something positive here today. We're dealing with budget cuts and gloom and doom, but we want to look forward into the future. And at Minnesota Milk Producers Association, we have been laying the groundwork for the last few years for what we believe is something that's needed for the future. And we believe it's time to step forward and lay the foundation for a new era of dairying in Minnesota. We believe it's time for a new dairy research, teaching, and consumer education center. We need a facility that will lead Minnesota's dairy industry with research that fits our dairy farms here in Minnesota and shows us what we need to be profitable and sustainable far into the 21st century. We need a teaching facility that's there to train the new generation of dairy producers, some of who you will see later on in this session here. We need a consumer education facility to bridge the disconnect that we're getting from farm to consumer, while at the same time helping us on the farm learn new ways to bring our stewardship to the highest level possible. Before I close, out on the farm, especially those of us in the livestock industry, are increasingly under scrutiny as far as our operations. But I want to share a story with you that I had a dairy farmer friend come to my farm office yesterday to chat with me. And this is what he told me, because we were talking about this issue of the scrutiny that we're under. And he said, "I work hard from early morning till late at night, with every step of my day focusing on making sure my cows are clean, dry, healthy, and well-fed. My cows get fed before I have breakfast. And in the evening, they're fed and milked long before I see the dinner table. If the public could only see how much I care for my cows." I just wanted you to hear that story, because we on the farm do care about our livestock. We care about our cows. They're important to us. They're living, breathing, wonderful animals. And yes, they're part of how we make a living. But we want you to know that we care. So, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for the opportunity, and I will introduce to you Minnesota Milk Producers Association Vice President Greg Jans.
Welcome.
Thank you. Chairman Junke and committee members, my name is Greg Jans, and I dairy farm in the little town of Grove City in Meeker County, and I'm about a half a mile from Chairman Junke's district, and Dean Erdahl is my representative here. I'd like to thank you for putting the dairy investment grant out there. Our family was recipients of that, so we appreciate that. And we did spend a lot of money this year, and as usual, I time things kind of wrong. But hopefully in the dairy industry for the state, and I called my tax man yesterday saying this is the deadline. I says, "Don't I have to get it in?" And he says, "You don't have to worry about it this year. If you don't pay, you don't have to file on by March 1st. So that's my situation. And he said that 80% of his dairymen this year that he does taxes for are pretty much in the same situation.
We tell us what specifically you did with that grant.
What was that?
What did you use the grant for on your farm? I know it's used for various things. Tell us a little more about what you used it for.
Okay, we actually almost doubled the size of our herd operation. We've been working on this for 2 years in the planning process. We had everything put together in the way we wanted to build the facilities, and the downturn came, you know, towards the end of last year, and we thought, well, we're going ahead. You know, dairy farming isn't a one-year deal, so we do it for a lifespan. So we built this the facilities strictly for cow comfort and people comfort. Our first facility was probably what I would call a low-cost facility. We looked at building it, and it still was cow comfortable. But, you know, the least per stall investment, this one was kind of almost the opposite way. If you know me, we didn't spend any more than we had to. But we have total cow comfort in this facility. It's a cross-ventilated barn, so we can control the environment in there. And we're converting our old barns over to the same type of facility. And all the cows lay on sand, which is probably the optimum cow comfort. We reuse the sand. So, and of course, we're going through growing pains and learning, but it's working out good right now. So as the milk price comes back, we'll be back into profit. So that's what we did with it. My son is in farming operation with us, so we appreciate the investment grant. And I think that investment grant is part of why we've seen the industry turn around in Minnesota. In 2004, We've had a steady decline in milk production in Minnesota since the 50s until 04. In 04, we turned that around, and we've actually had an 8% increase over that period of time. And I think it has to do a lot with attitude. We see encouragement from at the state level, even encouraging people to get back into the operations, and I think that all helps. And Pat said, there's no better place in Minnesota dairy. So I think we've turned that corner. We're hitting a stumbling stone this year, but we got a lot of young people out there that want to get back into the industry, and there's a lot of people reinvesting into their operations. So I think we make it through these next couple of years. I think the dairy will come back to the Midwest where it belongs. So that's why I think it's definitely a need for a research facility in this state. And what we're proposing here for a research facility is just something, ideas that a lot of it came out of discussion and stuff, but this would be a facility that would be the state-of-the-art facility for the world. I do not know of any research facility that would do this, and I think if we want to make marks in going forward, we have to build something that it's going to be used in the right way. We don't have research now that can do. There's a lot of good research going on in the university, but we don't have research that can be done on a controlled environment and at the size that we need to do it to get some good results. So we're going to kind of step through some of the benefits that this research facility would be. There's a lot more than just what it would bring to the dairy industry. There's a lot of other aspects to this facility that can be tied into it. And this facility would tie a lot more aspects into it, and I think this facility, there's several places in Minnesota where it could be built that would fit in, but I'm going to pick on the region where I live, so I'll talk about the benefits of having it in a region like ours, but I'm sure there's other spots in the state that would also be good. But so if I'm talking about my area, just because that's where I'm from, and I don't get out too much, so. Anyway, this where I thought of locating this facility, agricultural area is the number one. And I live in the agriculture area, so the feed source is there, land application for manure is there, the infrastructure is there. We have three large processing plants within 30 miles of my location, a couple smaller ones, and we have the largest turkey processor, I don't know if it's the United States, but it's got to be close to in Wilmer, the Genial Turkey Store there. And the reason those things fit in is there's byproducts coming out of those places that could possibly someday build a digester that could be on this site. And I think, we talk about the carbon footprint all the time and that type of stuff. I think we're just touching on what we can actually do with some of these waste products that we now have to pay money to get rid of, or they go down a sewer system, and it costs tons of money for cities to build bigger sewer systems to handle our byproducts. So I think all that can be incorporated into a facility like this, so we have a digester system that does research on other fuels that can go into the, along with that cow manure. And then in return, the location I think of has an ethanol plant right next door to it. We can use the DDGs, which the dairy industry has utilized, over the last few years. We could probably power that ethanol plant coming out of the energy that we're producing out of this dairy. The other thing that the ethanol industries have is their wastewater, or it's not really wastewater, their cooling water, which comes out of the ground, but once it comes out of the ground, it's not clean enough to discharge back into the on top of the ground, even though it's the same product. Maybe some way we can recycle that through the dairy and use it to water the cows with and recycle it through there and save lots of money that way. So there's just tons of research that can be done outside the dairy. But the dairy also needs a lot of research too. So kind of how, an overall picture of it, how I would see it, it'd be a 1,000-cow dairy because we need to get the size to do a good job of researching. And it'd be sort of a quick go through this layout. And we would have a traditional, like I was talking about, a cross-ventilated barn where we can control the environment in that barn. So when you're doing research, you don't have a 95-degree day that screws up your whole research. You can control the temperature in there to a certain degree. And so this would be a traditional freestall barn, cross-ventilated. And we'd have our milk center here. And then to go along with that is the new thing in Minnesota is robot milkers. And they're coming in like game boxers, and I think they have a perfect fit. Because For the dairy producer, which I call is the traditional good dairy person that wants to take care of his cows, but maybe doesn't have time, doesn't, the milking is what holds him up from having a social life and stuff. He can put in a robot. That robot can be there to milk for him when he's not there, and he can still take care of the cows, and that's his love, is taking care of the cows. So I designed it so that half of this barn here would have robots at the end of it, and I don't know anything about robots, so I just kind of laid it out. They'd be on the end here, and these cows would be there. These cows would still be milked through the parlor here, so there'd be two identical 500-cow barns. And these barns are big enough, so these pens are, can either be 60 cows big or 120 cows big, because when you talk to the professors, that's some of the problems they have, is they don't have facilities that can group that many cattle together to do research that needs to be done. Sometimes on cow comfort and cow behavior, it's nice to do that. They do some of that work on commercial dairies now, but you can't really control the research as good on a commercial dairy, because, you know, sometimes you got to do research that's going to do harm to cows, and most producers don't really want you to do research if you're going to hurt your cows. So this dairy could have that opportunity to, you know, see weight loss or whatever it is. And then you'd have a fresh barn here with these cows, would be going to be called a special meat barn, and they'd have a vet area and that type of stuff, and then a dry cow facility. And then your manure system and your digester would be over here. And I think there'd probably be just as much emphasis on the research there, because I still think we're wasting a lot of stuff in throughout our whole food chain that could be used and get money back out of it. So there should never be a waste project, I don't believe, coming out of the food chain. And as Pat had mentioned, I think we need to re-educate our consumers. We're getting fourth, fifth generations away from the farm. You know, 50 years ago, everybody had some relationship to a farm. Nowadays, there's a lot of people that have no idea about farming. And that's why I think we're seeing some of these crazy rules and regulations coming down, how we're going to manage our cows from tail docking to whatever it may be. I think if we provided a facility that had a good teaching atmosphere where people could come there and you could tour them through the facility, show them how good you take care of your cows, you might have a different opinion than when they actually see it. A prime example, in Illinois, is they have a facility called Bear Oaks, and we took a couple of the professors there a few years ago and showed them that. And this was a nice place, maybe a little bit extravagant, but they had a stage up there where they were calving cows. They have two individual pens there that were glassed in, and people could sit in the audience and watch those cows calf. And there are people that sit there all day because they've never seen anything being born. So it was really an attraction. They had plastic cows there, full-size cows, and then they had milking machines there so the kids could come through and put milkers on the cows. And they had a little cheese plant there, so they made their own cheese and had a store there and sold cheese. Then you got to take a bus tour of the actual dairy. And it's closer to me, it was probably an hour drive from Chicago. It was the fastest there was ever an off-ramp ever built on the freeway system in Chicago, because that's how much interest there was going out to this dairy. So, I mean, there's a need for that. And Wilmer, it's maybe a stretch from the metropolitan area for bringing that population in, but it's only an hour and a half, hour, 45-minute drive. We're an hour from St. Cloud. Couple hours from Rochester, a little over an hour, hour and a half from Marshall, 15 minutes from Wilmer. And so I, you know, for those reasons, it'd be a good facility. I have another overall picture of this and that back there. So we put a little time into getting something started. You got to have something to look at to shoot bullets at, I think. The other nice part about this would be the educational part of it. For instance, the Ridgewater College there, they need a hands-on place for their students. And we've seen that. Chairman Junkie was on the bus tour down to Iowa, where they have about 200-cow dairy there right next to their school. And that has attracted students from all parts of Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin. They are getting the students to go there because they have that hands-on facility for teaching. So that's why Wilmer's another prime example of a good place to have it. So that's kind of the one idea. I mean, that's just a start. But I think we need to make this facility big enough to do what we want it to do. Right now we have a couple facilities in the university system, and they can do small research, but they can't do anything of this scale. So I think that there's great opportunities there. So kind of what we're asking of the committee, the dairy industry, the educational institutes. We're not asking for any money this year for research facilities or anything like that. However, we'd like the committee to set a framework up for the 2012 legislative session to have something to come forward with. So what we're asking the committee to do is in their 2010 supplemental budget, if they could direct the Department of Agriculture to facilitate discussions between the milk producers, the dairy processors, the educational institutions, and others that would have an interest in a project like this, and bring it back to us in time for the 2012 legislative session. And we're willing to sit down with the committee to work out on details of how we're going to finance this. We got some ideas, and we'd like to sit there. I guess sometimes we forget about how important education is, and have we lagged behind it in the dairy part? I don't know. We had a senator from my hometown, the Grove City, went to my church, and this Stanley Holmquist was his name, and he had a brother-in-law, Elmer L. Anderson, and I remember Stanley always talking about this, but he said, education should be the economic engine of Minnesota. And I think there's some truth in that, that we need to educate our young people if we want to continue growth in this state. Thank you.
All right. Any questions to that? Mr. Martin, I see you in the back row. I trust you and the dairy producers and others can maybe sit down and think about what some language might look like in a bill this year to get that started. They're shooting for the bonding bill 2 years from now, and that, which is good. We're thinking ahead, and what kind of language would we need just to facilitate that type of activity over the next year or so? If you'd help us with that, we appreciate it. He's nodding his head yes for the tape.
I think you should have a scoping document that we put together. Did you?
Yeah. All right. Okay. Who? Dean Ames? Who's next? Trevor Ames. Dr. Trevor Ames. Okay. All right. Well, we'll let them introduce themselves. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Junkie and committee representatives. Thank you.
Wait a minute. Before, is there more milk over there? Make sure anyone sitting in the audience, I don't want any of that milk to leave the to stay here when we're done. So if you want a carton of milk, if there's some there, go get it, will you? I got kids in the audience. I got all sorts of people might like milk. So help yourselves if you're thirsty. All right, go ahead.
Okay. By all means, we want to drink milk. Thank you for allowing me a few moments of your time today to update you on our dairy programs. For the record, my name is Jim Lynn, and I am head of the Department of Animal Science at the University of Minnesota. As a background for me, prior to becoming head, I was a dairy extension nutritionist for 25 plus years here in the state of Minnesota. And today, when I need a little sanity break from my administrative duties, I still participate in extension programs and do a little bit of teaching and research as well. Dairy is important to the state of Minnesota, as you just heard. The University of Minnesota is committed to providing the research, education, and outreach information the dairy industry needs to succeed today and into tomorrow. The Minnesota dairy industry has experienced a slow but moderate growth over the last several years, and today I'm happy to be sharing with you some growth and excitement here at the University of Minnesota and our dairy programs. And I'll start with talking about our student numbers, our undergraduate education. Our student numbers continue to increase. There's very strong interest in our animal science program. We are currently the largest single major in the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences with a 415 number enrollment. About 50% of these students are in the pre-vet program, as Dr. Trevor Ames will talk about in a minute, but the rest of them are in a production agriculture area, with more than half of these students in the production area being part of the dairy interest program. With this represents our dairy Gopher Dairy Club, which is the largest club on campus in the University of Minnesota and is also the largest dairy club in the U.S. for any university or college, with over 100 members enrolled in the dairy club. Many of these members are outstanding leaders participating in university governance and activities within the college. Our graduation rate continues to be excellent in a four-year period. We're finding key positions for our graduates. Our placement rate on graduation has been well over 90% for this decade. Many of these students are going into professional schools, such as College of Veterinary Medicine. Several are returning to the farm, and many are going out into industry and serving the dairy industry that you heard about earlier from the speakers. As for faculty, we've added some new faculty. We've been able to add one person particularly this past year and a half. Noah Litherland is in starting a second year as a dairy extension specialist in the area of nutrition, and has been a great addition to our faculty and been a valuable asset to the dairy industry in his educational programs. Thanks to support from this committee and previously, we are in the midst of a search for a pasture-based dairy scientist with emphasis on organic dairy research at the University of Minnesota Research and Outreach Center at Morris, Minnesota. We're, as I said, actively in search for this position, and we'll be hopefully interviewing some candidates here within about a month. We also are in the final interview stages of a position at Grand Rapids, which is a beef, cow, calf management position, and has some ties and relationships to our dairy faculty, and particularly we're looking at the person here at Grand Rapids being cooperative and synergistic with the person at Morris in the organic pasture-based system. So we're fortunate to be able to have added these three new positions in this past year. Our commitment to the production agriculture research remains strong. Our research programs are addressed many areas in the dairy management and our current societal issues that you've heard a little bit about in terms of climate change, food safety, and nutrient management are all parts of our research program. The last couple of years have been very difficult for dairy farming in Minnesota. You know, dairy operations have seen major decreases in their net worth and have been subject to high feed prices and low milk price. Our extension programs have worked with the dairy industry to help our dairy producers through these difficult economic times. While we couldn't change milk price, unfortunately, we have worked with the dairy industry and dairy producers to provide the research-based information that they need to make knowledgeable cost control decisions. I'd also be kind of remiss in not just mentioning our partnerships and in people that we work with as part of the University of Minnesota, but within the dairy industry to make our program successful. One of them here to my left is the College of Veterinary Medicine, and particularly our VetFast program, which I'm sure Dr. Ames will be discussing, and getting the young people involved in the veterinary profession leading into large animal practices. That program has been very successful and continues to grow and continues a strong interest by those coming in the pre-vet program. We also work very closely with the Minnesota milk producers, as you have just heard, looking at various parts of the educational programs from research and teaching programs as well. And so we're very happy and pleased to work with that group and looking in the direction, future directions for the dairy industry. Also, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has been important to our success program. You know, the Quality Counts program is one example of where we partnered with the Department of Agriculture and has dramatically improved the quality of milk in Minnesota over the past 4 to 5 years now, and working through a partnership with them. So we have several partners in working with us, that we're not doing it alone at the University of Minnesota, and we need to acknowledge them and appreciate their help. And we provide the extension education, the research, and hopefully the personnel capital that the dairy industry needs to go into the future and solve tomorrow's challenges for the dairy industry. So with that, I thank you, Chairman Junke, and members of the committee for allowing me to give you a brief update on our programs.
Okay. You going to chime in about your vet school here? Or? All right.
Thank you.
Visual aids. We always like visual aids. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Chairman Junke, and thank you, members of the committee, for this opportunity to talk to you about what's going on at the Veterinary College And also thank you to the Minnesota Milk Producers Association for their willingness to include us in this important day at the Capitol. I'm Trevor Ames. I'm the Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine. At the college, we think about how we support the dairy industry in Minnesota in a number of different ways. We feel we have an important mission to meet the workforce needs, training veterinarians, research scientists, and public health professionals. We also feel we have to conduct research that supports the needs of the dairy industry, especially as it surrounds production-limiting diseases like mastitis and Yoni's disease, prudent use of drugs on dairies, food safety, and other important issues such as animal welfare. And we also have a strong service mission for the dairy industry through our outreach programs. We host one of the fourth or fifth largest dairy health conferences in the nation. We have a number of online courses for producers, and we have a growing number of on-site courses at our new Sweden facility, as well as all the programs our individual faculty are involved in. Our diagnostic lab is an important service unit for the agricultural industry of the state, and as well as the dairy industry. And I believe we have a tour of your committee set up for March 24th. And so I look forward
to Rep. Simo Tremba's committee will be coming
all right.
out.
And yep. So I look forward to hosting you, and I won't spend any more time on that. So I can move through these slides fairly quickly because I used them last year when I talked to this committee about meeting the manpower needs of the state. And I talked about a large study that had been conducted about what the veterinary profession needed to do to meet the food animal manpower needs. And it involved recruitment, mentoring, proper incentives, and then adequate preparation through proper education and training facilities. And so I'm happy to say that we continue with our selection process that not only focuses on academics but also focuses on behavioral traits that predict for success. We continue to use our VetFast program that Dr. Lynn talked about that helps us recruit and retain students with a food animal interest from rural Minnesota. And I'm happy to say that there's a growing interest for VetFast scholarships. This is something that a lot of our rural veterinarians want to contribute to, and we have three or four of these now that are four-year scholarships. I want to thank this committee for their support of the State Loan Forgiveness Program. We're one of about a handful of states that have such a program, and I want to tell you that there are 20 applicants for the funding for that program. And we'll be deciding on that in the next few days. And so there is a federal program now that's also in place. I talked to you last year about our combined DVM Masters of Public Health programs. We train more veterinary public health professionals than the rest of the nation combined. And then what I want to spend a little time on today is talking about educational facilities, the need to get our students into the real world and get their hands on animals. And so our educational pyramid is based on a pre-vet program, like what Dr. Lynn discussed, with at least 3 years in the College of Agriculture. Then they move through sort of the basic sciences into the infectious disease, pathology topics, then into medicine, surgery, reproduction, public health. And they can't wait to get to the fourth year. After 6 years, they want to get to the fourth year, get their hands on animals every moment of every day, and start working with producers as well as animal owners. And so this fourth year, we allow a lot of electivity in our program. They get to choose 28 two-week rotations or sort of hands-on experiences or clinical experiences. And there is significant specialization allowed at our school, much more than other schools. So if they want to spend the majority of that time working on dairy cattle, they have an opportunity to do that. And a key component of that hands-on experience in the food animal area involves our teaching and research farms. And so of those 65 rotations, 20 of those focus on food animal topics and specifically, our dairy, swine, and small ruminant teaching farms provide a great opportunity for these students, and they supplement what they learn working in the diagnostic lab and in our large animal hospital. I spent 25 years teaching students in our large animal hospital, and it worked very well at the time, but with the changing nature of agriculture, it's not realistic to expect that the producers are going to be hauling dairy cows into the middle of St. Paul to be treated in a hospital and then hauled back to the farm after they've been in a hospital. We still see, you know, a decent number of cows every year, but it was very important that we came up with a different educational experience for our senior students. And so we built an academic center that's fully integrated into a private commercial dairy that's owned by the Davis Family Dairies in southern Minnesota. It's near St. Peter, Minnesota, specifically in New Sweden. There's 3,000 milking cows and an additional 3,000 cows at a nearby dairy. All 6,000 cows go through this facility for dry cow calving, and then some of them return to the home dairy at Northern Plains. It includes teaching facilities as well as research facilities, and we believe it's a premier site for veterinary dairy education. It has an academic building that's integrated into the dairy operation between the rotary parlor and the special needs barn, adjacent to the calf management facility. There's two floors in this academic building. The first floor has got conference room, wet lab for demonstrations and hands-on teaching. It's got a clinical treatment and teaching area that can handle up to 5 cows at a time. It's got research lab space as well as other support facilities for the dairy. The second floor includes a large classroom that can seat 60 at tables, which overlooks a calving area. It's got a smaller classroom that seats 24 at tables and overlooks the rotary parlor. It's got bathrooms and a food service that can accommodate continuing education. And an important part for us was that we needed to create a facility where our students could stay. Their educational expenses are pretty high, and so if we can put them out in this facility and they've got housing and they can use their, you know, bring their own food into the facility and cook it, it greatly reduces their cost. And so we built a facility that houses up to 24 students and 2 instructors at a time. So we also use it for dairy professional education. We've had 6 or 7 programs there since it opened in September. And these are residential programs where the graduate veterinarians are actually, they live in the dorm rooms as well. We also have educational programs for other professionals that are interested in animal health topics like nutritionists, dairy managers, and especially the tech service personnel that are associated with the pharmaceutical companies and the biological companies also are very interested in this training. Because of the facility and the information systems there, we're able to follow the animal's lifetime records, its lactation records, as well as the group dry matter intake, and there is a lab there that allows us to do a certain amount of research as well as processing samples to bring back to the veterinary college. Another really important part of this facility is that it's integrated into the Davisco milk processing plant in Le Sueur. So our students not only learn about dairy management and dairy health, but they also understand the continuum into the food chain and the food supply, and they can get training in food safety issues as well. So to summarize our academic mission, we really want to train our veterinary students in a premier facility, and as I'll talk in 1 minute, we're also looking at could we train veterinary students from across the nation. We want to be able to educate professionals serving the dairy industry. We want to be able to conduct applied research and development and provide a focus for dairy food systems education and research, and to serve as a demonstration site for the value of modern technology in dairy. I talked a little bit about this goal of training veterinarians from across the nation. The leadership of the veterinary profession for the last 4 or 5 years has talked about the need to consolidate education into a few facilities for food animal. It's very, very expensive education. And if there was a way that we could consolidate so that some schools would teach about dairy medicine and other schools might teach about catfish farming, we think that Mississippi would be a good place to teach about catfish farming. We think Minnesota would be a great place to teach about dairy farming. So the federal farm bill specifically authorizes the creation of these regional and national centers of excellence in veterinary education. And you can read the specific wording, but it talks about avoiding duplication of costs. It talks about coordinating education. It talks about using public-private partnerships to achieve this goal. So in summary, this facility and much of our strategies around educating our food animal students using these farms is directed at addressing an important need. It specifically follows the blueprint laid out by the veterinary profession and the federal farm bill. It provides access to full-scale commercial operated modern farm with integration into routine activities so they get the context of actual operations. And a really important thing is that because of the scope of activity going on in this facility, when we have students there, there is always adequate educational material for those students. They can get their hands on a lot of cows. They can get the experience they need. Another really important piece is the understanding of the food supply chain, not only for students going into the dairy industry, which we would expect, but also all of our public health professionals, our students that are going to work in the Department of Ag and the Department of Health and USDA. We believe it's really important that they understand the food supply chain so that they can make informed decisions surrounding these industries. Obviously, with the financial constraints that the state is having, as well as with reduced support of higher education, anything we can do to reduce the cost of research and education is important, and we believe we've done this through this partnership model. Thank you very much for your time and your attention.
Very good. Any questions for you or the vet? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doctor, you mentioned the loan forgiveness program for veterinarians. It's an outstanding program. You said you had 20 applications. How much funding is there, and how many scholarships will you provide?
The funding through the state of Minnesota will fund 3 students. It'll provide $15,000 a year for up to 5 years for those 3 students. So we're very hopeful that this is something that could be renewed in the next biennium. And in addition, the federal program, while it's been on the books for many years, has finally kicked into gear, and there may be the opportunity for up to another 7 funded through the federal program as well. And then we have scholarships at the vet school that are a result of donations, and they can fund at a much lower level, maybe $5,000 a year, up to 2 or 3 students right now while they're in veterinary school.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers here at the table, then also I'd be interested in hearing from one of the testifiers that was testifying just previously on the proposal from the Minnesota Milk Producers. I'm just curious as to, you've recently built this new facility for veterinary medicine, and the Minnesota Milk Producers are looking at a new facility. I'm just wondering, have you, the two groups collaborated, and is there a way to accommodate the needs at the current facility that you have?
Is there a difference between veterinary training and the nutritional, animal husbandry and other training that, and could they be incorporated, or are we drawing a wall? I think that's what he's asking.
Representative Welty, Chairman Junkie, I will sort of talk a little bit and then let Dr. Lynn follow up. We have had discussions with the College of Agriculture and the Department of Animal Science, to some extent, the types of training and the types of research are unique and different. Our relationship with the Davis Family Farm is a public-private partnership, and it is a lot like a marriage in that it requires considerable compromise on both parts in order for a successful relationship. I think that we have agreed that the types of research that we do there will be observational research, and we there's lots that we can do there in terms of a whole variety of things. I can give you a list of examples of things like products that you could try for to look at preventing mastitis or you know, how long you leave a cow that's in labor before you intervene, or should every cow be treated for ketosis. There's just a lot of these sorts of observational studies, but there's really nothing that we can do that interferes with the production of that dairy. And so I think that that creates a kind of a unique set of circumstances that it sort of is a win-win scenario with between what we're trying to do with our veterinary students, what we're trying to do with the kinds of observational research that we're doing and our faculty have sort of focused on, and what the dairy is willing to have go on their facility. Dr. Mayor.
I believe Dr. Ames covered a lot of the points, but there is a little difference between animal husbandry or management and research, nutrition research, and limitations at the dairy, the New Sweden dairy that he just mentioned. The other thing is, I think, capacity. For the number of our students, and if we partner with Ridgewater in a new dairy area and teaching students, I think the capacity also is a limitation at the New Sweden dairy. So that would be the other point that I would add.
I'm Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. I know today is Dairy Day, and I'm glad they're here. Earlier in your presentation, though, you mentioned some of the other off-site research facilities, and I know that we do have a turkey research facility at the UMOR site. Could you talk a little bit about the future of turkey research here in Minnesota?
Dr. Lynn?
Chairman Junkie, representative. The future of the turkey research facility is something we need to address here in the future. There's no question about it. We started to plan for new facilities, and we're looking at new facilities hopefully in the future here, but the cost became quite prohibitive in the locations, and we just did not get it done. But the facilities at UMOR Park are right in the midst of where the gravel will be started to be mined here in the next 3 to 5 years. And so we obviously will have to relocate those facilities to it. The turkey industry, as you know, is the number one industry in the nation here in Minnesota. It's a very important part of our economy. It's an important part of our programs, both within our college and in the College of Veterinary Medicine. And the facilities also are quite old. I think they were built back in the 50s, if I know correctly, and have seen some updating, but minimal updating since then. And so we do need some very modern research facilities to meet the needs of a very growing and rapidly growing industry here in Minnesota, and a very viable industry as well.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief follow-up. You know, the public-private efforts in the dairy industry and the research facility near New Sweden are to be applauded. I'm hoping that you're exploring a similar opportunity possibly in the turkey industry. We do have a number of major industry players here in the state.
Good. What we're going to do now is move on for planning purposes. We're going to bring the Ridgewater folks up. We'll end with Mr. Ward, and then we'll end the day with the Lutheran Social Service. So if you're here for Next Gen Energy, we'll move that till tomorrow. We'll get you all a chair up there. You might want to get a taller one than that brown one. Grab one right from the table in front of you there. Arlen will help you find one. Welcome to the committee. Whoever wants to start, introduce yourself for the record. Use the microphones there and proceed.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good morning. I'm Brant Gruen, dairy management instructor at Ridgewater College in Wilmer.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good morning. I am Stephanie Plates. I am enrolled in the Ridgewater Dairy Management Program. I am from Lucan, Minnesota, and I'm going to be graduating in May of 2010. And following graduation, I plan to form a partnership with my boyfriend and manage a 60-cow dairy.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am Brooke Hackett. I'm from Rice, Minnesota. Grew up on a dairy farm. I attend Ridgewater right now. I plan to graduate in May of 2010, and following graduation, I plan to go back home for a while and then eventually start my own business of hoof trimming.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am Thomas Marzinski. I'm from Janesville, Minnesota, and enrolled in the Ridgewater College Dairy Management Program, and will graduate in May of 2010. I plan to expand the family dairy after graduation.
Just to tell you a little bit about our ag program at Ridgewater, we have five different ag programs, which consists of agribusiness, agronomy tech, farm operation management, GPS, GIS technician, and the most important one, dairy management. And also we have students who come to our school for the first 2 years to go transfer on to be for a bachelor degree. Our program has grown considerably in the last 10 years. 10 years ago we had 127 FTEs in our ag program, and today we have over 200 FTEs. We are the largest ag program in the state of Minnesota by far. We have 57 dairy management students in our program this year, freshmen and sophomores, and of that 57%, 60% of them will return back to their home farm. The next biggest group will go out as herdspeople for dairy farms, and the remainder will go out in the agribusiness world and the dairy industry. 90% of our dairy enrollment is from Minnesota. Like I mentioned, we are the largest ag program in the state. We have 9 faculty members in our ag program, and we teach over 70 different courses. The strong relationship that we have with industry allows us to have our students do 2 4-week internships, one in approximately the month of October and the other one in the spring. Also with this relationship, we have had 100% placement at our school for 20 plus years in our ag program. Typically we have 3 to 5 jobs for every graduate of our program, and we expect that to be true again this year.
Our student organization, Post-Secondary Agriculture Students, is the largest PAS chapter in the United States. I have had the opportunity to travel and see many other dairies through field trips we have taken as part of the dairy program. These trips have been a great experience because it gave me new ideas for dairy facilities and expanding our family dairy and different styles of management to better manage our operation.
Our technical ag program is very unique. Many programs don't have uniqueness that our ag program has, because our students, 4 to 6 years after they graduate, many of them are assistant managers or managers of either their farm or a business that they work with. So that's kind of unique. With this, because our students are going to be managers, and with the economy, you heard about what has happened with the dairy economy, our students need to really understand best management practices and the systems that are necessary to implement these best management practices. And so the question is, how can we make educational experience at Ridgewater College even greater and provide better dairy employees, dairy farm owners, and operators for our state's dairy industry?
That's for you, Cummins. Right now, Ridgewater Dairy, the management program, is like a mechanic shop without tools or any. We have all the knowledge, we just don't have the tools, we don't have the place to go to work, to get our hands dirty, to roll our sleeves up, and just to get a hold of the big picture for when we do go out into the large field. So we're asking for legislative support on making a dairy research center for teaching and to help the community understand.
We already do have a lot of great support from the industry and a great faculty. They're helping us experience the latest technology in animal and crop agriculture. Our on-campus facilities right now do not have adequate space, mainly for physical movement. We just don't have enough adequate classroom or laboratory space for 200 students.
We have no ability to handle livestock on campus, even for limited hours of the day. As a dairy management major, that means we must leave campus for all our hands-on experiences. And hands-on experiences are what students expect from a technical college program.
Many area dairy farmers are very gracious in allowing us Ridgewater dairy students to do activities on their farms, such as hoof trimming, learning how to do physicals, drenching, and blood work. However, there are many things we cannot do because we lack a training facility to learn such things as the daily management of a dairy, vaccinations, records, feed management, and health care.
Mr. Chairman and representatives, we appreciate your interest in allowing us to present here today. Today, to learn about our program, dairy facility needs. We appreciate the past support that you have given us for our post-secondary education, and we will thank you for any future support that you may seek for the Ridgewater current students and for the students that in the future are going to be partaking in Ridgewater, and especially the dairy management program.
All right, very good. Members, good to see you folks here. I do poke my head into the Ridgewater classroom once in a while, and you are full from wall to wall. It's amazing how many people go out there. But I also like your message, and I want to make sure you understand this committee. You heard Representative Torkelson ask a little bit ago about what are we going to do 3 to 5, 10 years down the road with turkey research or poultry research. Just like you're saying now, what are we going to do down the road to train our next generation of farm operators or managers or industry people? And certainly I think that's what our committee is concerned about here, is putting things in place that down the road we will see pay off. So certainly I think you have a good idea, and I know you've been working on it out there for a number of years, both the students and the instructors and others. So at least from this aspect, we'll give you the commitment of the committee that we'll keep working on it with you on this, and see if we can't develop something that is uniquely Minnesotan, I guess, when it comes to agriculture. So any questions for this group members? Representative Szymanski and I represent Ridgewater College, by the way. He has the Hutchinson campus, and I have the Wilmer campus. So thank you for making the journey down. I hope you have a good day at the Capitol. Mr. Ward. Here comes our Wisconsin guy. Welcome to the committee. You can introduce yourself, and I'll say he's a former representative lawmaker from Wisconsin. I don't know if he was going to say that or not, but we like to recognize our colleagues across the border, too. So.
And the best part about it, the former part. That's yeah. What I enjoy the most. Thank you, Representative Junkie and members of the committee. And I think after what we just saw, a lot of times, given the prices and the economic downturn in the dairy industry, people are always asked the dairy producers, why are you so optimistic about the future? And I think we just saw one of the reasons why we're so optimistic about the future with the bright, young, capable producers of the future that we just witnessed is one of the reasons why we're so optimistic. My name is David Ward. I'm the Director of Government Relations and Dairy for the Cooperative Network, which is a two-state trade association which represents all types of cooperative business, including our many dairy cooperatives in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Many of you may know that Minnesota has a very proud, and we're proud to be a co-sponsor of Dairy Day at the Capitol along with Minnesota Milk. But Minnesota has a very proud tradition in cooperatives. We're the number one cooperative state in the nation. Cooperatives produce about $15 billion in revenue, employ 46,000 people, and pay $64 million in taxes to the state of Minnesota every year. 90% of the milk produced in Minnesota is marketed through a cooperative. One of our latest projects that we're very hopeful that we'll get up and off the ground is a healthcare option for Minnesota producers and agribusiness. So they have a competitive and a well-structured health insurance and healthcare option that's clearly lacking in rural Minnesota for producers and agribusinesses. Cooperatives are big business in Minnesota, but so is the dairy industry, a big business in Minnesota. Total impact of about $9 billion on the state's economy. 39,000 jobs. Each cow in the state of Minnesota contributes about $15,000 to the state economy. In addition to the dollars that the dairy industry contributes to the state of Minnesota, the producers and the processors contribute to that fabric of rural Minnesota. Because of that, and because of the economics, dairy producers, and the $15,000 that each cow produces, dairy producers care very responsibly for the animals that they care and produce the milk that feeds people across the state of Minnesota. That responsible care not only goes from the love of the animals, but a well-cared-for animal is a well-producing animal. Minnesota dairy producers depend on the land and the water that they on their farms to continue the economic activity and to continue their allowing to be farmers. So they're very responsible stewards of the land and the water. I used to always like to say that Minnesota, the dairy producers are active environmentalists, not environmental activists. Despite the downturn in prices in 2009 caused by the downturn of the U.S. economy and world economy, which negatively impacted our sales both domestically and our exports, Minnesota dairy producers continued to increase their dairy production about 3% over the previous year, and continued to increase their cow numbers at about 466,000 dairy cows in the state of Minnesota. You may ask why this occurs in a period of low prices. A lot of it was alluded to earlier. We have a competitive advantage economically with transportation and feed costs over the rest of the country. But when you can look a little bit closer to programs like the Livestock Investment Grant Program, which has assisted producers, 50 producers in 2009 and 38 producers in 2008 upgrade their production facilities. Thank you for the support of the Livestock Investment Grant Program, the funding for the Livestock Investment Grant Program, but I think it shows that when the state of Minnesota becomes a partner with the dairy industry more than upholds its end of that partnership. But one of the problems is those receiving the grant pale in the number to those applying for the grant. And it's good to hear you're looking for a more permanent funding source for the Livestock Investment Grant Program. Also, we need continued increased funding for the dairy development and profitability enhancement teams. This assists Minnesota producers in making better management decisions to increase their profitability of their operations. Lastly, Minnesota needs a more predictable, consistent permitting process, which allows the dairy industry in Minnesota to grow while maintaining Minnesota's strong tradition of a good environment. So that, I'm very happy to be here for Dairy Day at the Capitol and partnering with Minnesota Milk, and be happy to try to answer any questions.
Except about
Brett Favre or anything like that.
All right, yeah, we won't go there. All right, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And thank you, everyone who came for Dairy Day. We always look forward to this day. It's something I know I speak for the committee when we are committed to dairy in this state, and no one here is more happy than us that have been here for a while, like Magnus and Otremba and some of the old-timers, because we did come through the years where it was every year, we're down. Now we're up the last couple of years, and I think we have turned that corner. And thanks to the legislature and the folks you all represent for recognizing the investment that needs to be done in dairy. So, all right, moving on. Ms. Young, right here from Lutheran Social Services, we get a report on the core program members. Again, this, the reason we're getting this report is we've got to understand if there's anything we need to address in our upcoming supplemental budget, and we want to get a quick update on it. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Again, former senator. Yeah, we always recognize the former lawmakers when they come before us, too. For those of you that haven't been here as long as Magnus, go ahead, introduce yourself, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It is a delight to be back here with many of my former colleagues, and thank you for the opportunity. I just wanted to mention there are some handouts that we have given your staff so that if you have a chance to pass those around.
Yep, they'll be passing those out.
Great. With me as our partner in the CORE program, and Deputy Commissioner Mike Pugliese is here as well, and I'm hoping that he might be able to take a few minutes as well. Because this has been a true partnership in this service. My name is Ember Reichgott Young. I am the Vice President and Chief Advancement Officer for Lutheran Social Service. And we, along with the department, are delivering the services of the CORE program, the LSS CORE program, which stands for Case Management, Outreach, Referral, and Education. And we serve veterans all over the state. It is a nation-leading program. It was created 2 years ago with the leadership of this committee and with the chairman, and we so appreciate the chance. It is actually a privilege and an honor for LSS to be serving veterans throughout the state in partnership with you. The program, CORE, started officially on July 1 of 2009. To date, we have served over 760 clients. Now, we expected the service to start slowly. We expected that veterans might not be willing to admit that they acknowledge that they might need some services. We found this to be the case at the beginning. What we are gratified now is to see is that word is spreading, and more veterans are now seeking the services that they need, as well as members of their family. And in fact, the services are growing very quickly. That's one of the reasons why we are here today. The demographics have been passed out for you, and I'm going to highlight just a couple of them right now. As I mentioned, up to now, we have served about 760-plus clients. 69% of them are male, 31% are female. Probably most important piece here is that 72 counties have had referrals, so this is clearly a statewide service. And finally, 76% of the services are used by the veteran, him or herself, or the military member, 16% by the spouse, 8% by the veteran's child or relatives. So again, it's a unique program in that it serves all of the family. Probably the best way to illustrate this program is through a story. And I want to tell you a little bit about Joe, who is a client. Joe is a Gulf War veteran. He is from Central Minnesota. And he had contacted his county veterans service officer from the emergency room when he was in the hospital because his teenage daughter had just attempted suicide. The CVSO contacted the local CORE office and the LSS mental health counselor, who reviewed the crisis and proceeded immediately to the emergency room to assist the veteran and his family. The veteran told the CVSO it was just too much, quote unquote. Prior to the crisis, the veteran had lost his job. They were battling foreclosure on their house. The veteran shared that he and his wife were undergoing marital difficulties and considering divorce, and neither of them were able to attend to the children's needs. The CORE LSS staff were able to provide a family counseling session that day. This is so unique, to be able to do it that day when it was so needed to address the crisis. They identified initial plans to assist with the threatened eviction. They initiated links with the family to food and clothing that was needed. Family and marital counseling began and has continued to be provided by the CORE mental health professionals. The housing crisis was averted. The family has reported improved daily living and relationships. And Joe stated that he believes that CORE services have, quote, saved his family. Now, what's really important about this story is that there are many more of them out there. But what's key to this service and to CORE is the immediate help for veterans, the immediate help, the comprehensive help, many different services being provided, like, for example, financial counseling along with mental health counseling. The services are for the veteran and the family, and the services are free to them because of the generous work of this committee. In January, I'll give you a snapshot of just what we have, what 1 month of service looks like. In January, 61 new clients access services for the first time. That's about 15 per week statewide. Of those 61 people, every single one was given the option of either a face-to-face counseling session immediately within 48 hours or a phone assessment. About 122 clients received mental health counseling. Clinical counseling care to veterans and their families were for such things as treating severe diagnostic mental health issues like PTSD, major depression, acute generalized anxiety, chemical dependency, and marital family issues. 40 clients were in crisis mode, presenting things like suicidal, homicidal risk of harm, severe mental health symptoms needing crisis management, pending divorce, bankruptcy, eviction, etc. And by the way, 9,900 miles statewide of travel to reach the veterans where they were, either in their home or at their place. This is I want to talk a little bit about the financials, but before I do that, I would be remiss if I didn't yield to our Deputy Commissioner, because this has truly been a partnership with the MDBA. Without their passion and support for this, we could not have this program, and we are very indebted to that partnership as well.
Thank you, Member. For the record, Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. As Member said, this really is a true partnership, and they're doing a wonderful job of delivering these services in the communities where our veterans reside. One of the other really meaningful aspects of this program is the financial counseling that they offer. We find many of our veterans are experiencing difficulties with their finances, and they are able to counsel them, help consolidate some of their issues, and move them forward and help develop a long-range plan. And we encourage most of our county veteran service officers, who also help drive this program, when they're applying for our other benefits, such as special needs, before we get a special needs request, we want them to go through the financial counseling so that a nice long-range financial plan can be developed before you send in an application for assistance. And it just stretches and goes that much further and really provides long and meaningful help rather than putting a Band-Aid on a sucking chest wound. We're really fixing the problem long-term. It's been really wonderful to watch it take off. It started off pretty slowly, like any new program does. But once the county veteran service officers and some veterans started using it and they saw how wonderful it was and that truly there is no expense and that it isn't related to the VA or the government and that we don't share information with them and all these other issues that they have out there, they really embrace this program and it's really taking off and it's really providing very, very meaningful help to our veterans and their families. And that's one of the hugest gaps that we've had in the past. There were no services for the families. And we know that they suffer along with the veterans during these deployments when they come home. There's a lot of problems. So this really, truly helps make that family whole again. And they're doing a wonderful job. I can't say enough good things about them.
So, Mr. Chairman and members.
Yeah. Representative Anderson.
Oh. Thanks. Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. My ears perked up. You talked about this having some immediate care for veterans and mental health care. Are all veterans eligible for this type of service?
Who's eligible?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, any veteran, military member, or their family members are eligible, free of charge.
Okay. So unlike some programs where it's just combat vets or some, right. This is for everyone who has served their country, can walk into a CVSO and say, I got some problems, and we find them a home. Yeah. Great.
So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the issue is that the good news is that veterans are stepping forward and receiving these services and that how important that is. When we talked about this program early on with the chairman and with the committee, we had estimated that we might need $2 million for 2 years to actually serve what we thought would be the need. And this committee put that in that budget. And then it was reduced as we went through the process to $1 million. So the current funding is $500,000 for the first year, which we're in, and $500,000 for next year. As we predicted, the services needs are much greater than that. And we are estimating that the original $2 million estimate is probably necessary to serve all the folks that are going to need services in the next 2 years. Most critically, we are now in the first year of the appropriation of $500,000, and we have spent $420,000 serving the veterans for a variety of those services that you have heard about. We are serving veterans at the rate right now of $85,000 a month. You can do the math. At $420,000 spent, we have 1 month left of services for the month of March. The reason we are here is because there will be a gap. We cannot even fathom telling 122 clients who are receiving mental health services that they are just going to simply end in April. We cannot fathom that we're going to have to deny 61 new clients maybe in April or May who need these services. And so we come today and reach out to you just saying we need a solution. And my hope is that our words are also being heard by others in the community so that they might be able to step forward as well. We believe that in order to serve the clients for the rest of this year and next year, that probably another $1 million would be necessary at this rate. Mr. Chairman, I know that there are huge budget problems right now. I get that. I've been in your shoes and your seats, although it wasn't quite that bad when I was here. So I get that this is a really difficult time. So we are just simply here saying We are looking for alternatives. We are looking for leads. We want to work with you, the MDBA, foundations, anyone that can help us, because we do not want to deny one single veteran the service that they deserve.
All right. And to members, certainly, you know, this was the first year of a program, and we were in unknown territory, certainly. What they did, what we instruct them to do, the department actually put out an RFP, and a number of folks answered that RFP, and Lutheran Social Services won the bid. So it was an open bid process, and certainly the reason we asked them back today was to give us that update. So as we're putting budgets together now, we can understand the need and perhaps what we're going to have to see to get it through the end of this fiscal year and into the next major budget cycle. So certainly it is a good program, and it follows with what the department and the legislature are trying to do, and that's provide services to veterans county by county. You know, when you live in Twin Lakes, it's hard to drive down to Minneapolis or to St. Cloud even to get services. Here they're available right in the county where they live. And I think we continue that goal, whether it's seeing a dentist or an eye doctor or getting financial counseling or mental health advice or counseling. All that should be accessible in the county where you live. And I think that's our long-term goal. This was one of our first forays into that as a partner with the department. And it's working. We just now have to understand how we can fund it and look into the future on what the needs might be. So questions to the core folks or the department on this? All right. Thank you. That was a very good update, very timely. Anything else before the committee? Members, we're here tomorrow with, we're hearing a bill, priority liens, interest to your, mainly your livestock producers and your bankers. So we'll hear about that. We'll get the Next Gen Energy Report, and anyone that might be wanting to testify on the governor's budgets certainly is welcome to do that tomorrow, too. So with that, we're adjourned.